My next guest is Holly Framstead, head of U.S. ETF's product segment at iShares. Of course, iShares is the largest ETF issuer in the world. And here in the U.S., they currently have about 370 ETFs, over $1.6 trillion in assets. And one of the categories iShares has continued expanding into, and certainly investors have been gravitating to, is factor-based ETFs, which offer exposure to things like value, momentum, minimum volatility. Factor ETFs have been a real growth category. And Holly is now on the line with me from San Francisco. Holly, it's a pleasure. Thanks for taking the time this week.
Thank you so much, Nate. It's great to be here.
So, Holly, anytime I talk factor investing on this show, I always like to start with a few basics, because my experience has been that factor investing can come across as a somewhat intimidating topic. And so let's start by just setting the table, covering a few basics, and then we can certainly dig a bit deeper. How do you like to describe factors and factor investing? Like, how do you like to boil this down?
Yeah, I think it's so important to boil it down, because you're right, the term factor feels very heady and mathy. And really, when we think about what we're talking about here, we are talking about broad, persistent, well-defined, and widely recognized drivers of return. Really, factors are the fundamental building blocks of a portfolio and the fundamental building blocks of what drives risk and return in any investment. There are kind of two layers of factors that I think it's important to know about: macro factors and style factors. Macro factors represent the drivers of return at the asset class level. So when we think about equities, usually we're talking about the macro factor of economic growth. When we think about fixed income, we're talking about macro factors like the level of interest rates or the rate of inflation. So this really explains the majority of the returns in a broad portfolio, and that's exactly what we mean when we say your asset allocation decision is important, because it's your choice of macro factors that you want exposure to. But when we talk factor investing from an investment standpoint and from a fund selection standpoint, usually we're referring to that second order of factor, which are the style factors. And style factors explain the dispersion of return within an asset class. So think value investing, which has been around and well recognized since Graham and Dodd published their book in the early 1930s. It was certainly popularized even more when Fama and French came out with their seminal study in the early 90s. So things like value investing, investing in high-quality companies, investing in stocks that are displaying momentum or are trending, are really the style factors that we're talking about most typically, and they are driving returns within asset classes.
Holly, something that I think is really important on the topic of factors is, I'm not sure some investors realize the factor exposures they're potentially taking on in a portfolio. Whether they understand the factors or not, I feel like they may not know they have certain exposures in their portfolios. Or I guess on the other hand, some investors may not realize they have no factor exposure at all in their portfolios. Can you talk about that, sort of this unintended factor exposure, and then perhaps the issue with having no factor exposure at all?
Yeah, it is so important to understand the factor exposures within a portfolio because, as I mentioned previously, they are really fundamental drivers of return. Just to give you some perspective, though, I think actually your latter point about a lack of factor exposures is a bigger problem for most than unintended factor exposures, though certainly both can happen. We have a portfolio consulting team that works across financial advisors in the U.S., and in the fourth quarter, they put out a research report where they analyzed a little over 16,000 models from advisors and clients that we've worked with. And some key takeaways that they found when looking at the factor exposures in those models and the explicit use of factors within those portfolios is that 60% of those advisor models included at least one factor product. So I think the great news here is that more and more financial advisors and individual investors are recognizing the importance of factor exposures when they build portfolios. The challenge that we're finding is that despite the fact that we see a 21% weighting to factor products where they are included in portfolios, so a pretty substantial chunk, we really at the portfolio level are not seeing strong tilts to any factors aside from the size tilt. And so that explicit bet of tilting more small cap than you are large cap, we're seeing that manifest itself in portfolios, but really not seeing the impacts of a lot of the other exposures. And I think in part it's because investors aren't fully appreciating how factors can cancel each other out And therefore, by casting a very wide net and thinking they've, you know, quote unquote, accessed the category, they are in fact neutralizing some of those bets. And so I think leveraging portfolio tools, certainly there are many available publicly, like on FactSet. Bloomberg has tools. Morningstar just came out with tools. Many of the clients I work with aren't paying for the premium level of service that is required to access those tools. So we've built some portfolio analytic tools within BlackRock's Advisor Center, our 360 Portfolio Evaluator. And then at the fund level, we have a web tool called FactorBox. At FactorBox.com, you can access it, and you can see the factor exposures within individual funds you're choosing. So I think we're starting to see a democratization of access to this information, precisely at the time when we're seeing increased investor interest and awareness of the importance.
And to be clear, when you talk about factors potentially canceling each other out, what's the risk here? Or is it more missed opportunity?
Well, I think it's more on the missed opportunity side. What we often find is that investors are placing a view, expressing a view within their portfolio, and that view isn't going to be fully realized because the bet simply isn't strong enough. I think about a traditional growth and value. So market cap weighted growth and value have been around for decades. BlackRock offers many funds that give exposure to this. But if you truly are taking a factor lens and you want to increase the value exposure within your portfolio, in a market cap weighted space, the size of that position needs to be so much larger because it's not weighting securities based on their exposure to the factors, and therefore it's giving you exposure to the value factor, but it's doing so in a less potent way. And so factor funds can provide a more potent exposure and therefore increase the weight to value, that intended tilt, in a far more capital efficient fashion than market cap weighted exposures can. And so I think in a lot of cases, it's really just about using an instrument that perhaps is too blunt or not sizing appropriately the more potent tool like that factor investment within the portfolio to make sure that you're going to see the effects of the return you want.
Okay, so with that as a backdrop, let's talk about the current market environment and everything we've seen over the past 6 months or so. I do feel like the factor discussion has moved even more front and center. There's been a lot more discussion on factors like quality and minimum volatility. Obviously, as you were alluding to, we still have this growth versus value debate simmering, though I've got to say value investors have to feel a bit cooked at this point. But can you talk about factors in this particular environment and maybe what's worked well?
Yeah, absolutely. I think a couple of important things to remember are that investments like quality and minimum volatility sound great at the surface, and they're fabulous tools, but I think it's always important to recognize why they have been working now, because of course in a challenged market environment, who doesn't want a high quality investment? I mean, it sounds fabulous. So let's talk a little bit about why QUAL and MINVOL, QUAL is our quality ticker, and USMV, our US minimum volatility ticker, have been gathering assets and have been performing quite effectively in this environment. When we think about late stage economic growth or economic contraction, which is currently where we believe we are, I think most would probably agree with that. When we think about quality as a factor is about investing in companies with strong balance sheets, stable earnings, and lower amounts of leverage relative to their peers. And if we think about an environment like we've just experienced and are still living through, where we've seen a near cessation in revenue generation from some firms, some industries, think apparel retailers, have struggled until, you know, recently a lot of places have allowed them to open doors for pickup, but arguably we're not seeing the same level of economic activity. In that environment, companies that have a more resilient business model, think consumer staples. We all still need our soup and we need to go to the grocery stores. Companies that have lower amounts of leverage, so they have less debt to service on the lower profits they're bringing in. Those types of firms should intuitively do better, and that is effectively what quality investing is saying. We're not investing in the breakout winners and a massive expansion. We're investing in the companies that have really strong, stable business models. So QUAL and MINVOL have been working very effectively in this environment, and it's really where we think clients should be positioning if they are positioning for kind of a long-run reset of their asset allocation in the expectation that there will be continued volatility.
As you go through that, sorry, go ahead.
No, well, let's get to the value versus growth debate, because I think that'll be the flip side of my next comment. if we talk about value for just a minute, value for us is really about positioning for the rebound. So I am not at this stage, BlackRock is not at this stage saying we are expecting a V-shaped recovery here. But certainly when we think about the tenets of when value works, it works best in an expansion. And we have not been in an expansion for over a decade. We've been in sort of late stages of economic growth, but not a massive acceleration off of a bottom. We have not seen a recession. And so what I think this pandemic might provide the opportunity for is that traditional rebound that favors value. If we were to start seeing a pickup in economic activity and a resumption of work, kids going back to school, et cetera, if we start to see that evolve through the fall in a fairly rapid fashion, I think we might be positioned to see a rebound in value. There's a lot of things that need to impact that, but when I think about the value versus growth debate, it really is largely influenced by the fact that we have not seen the favorable economic conditions for value to thrive in the last decade, and we might be approaching a time where that could be visible again.
Okay, so this is perfect because I want to get into how to actually implement factors in a portfolio. And if we go back and talk about quality and Menvol, as you were describing, and maybe they've historically performed well in more difficult environments, and then you talk about perhaps a rebound in value moving forward, how should investors think about implementing factors in their portfolio? Because at a certain level, it feels like they could sort of become tactical managers, right? So how do you think about timing factors?
Yeah, so I, full disclosure, I have spent my entire career working with index investments. So I, you know, my prior is that for most investors, setting the appropriate asset allocation and maintaining investment over the long run is the most impactful decision you can make for your portfolio over time. With that being said, I am, you know, not immune to the fact that many of our clients are instituting tactical tilts in their portfolio. And so while I think it's something that you should only do with caution and, you know, if you have confidence that you can do it appropriately and consistently over time, otherwise I think leave active management for active managers. But if you are expressing bets in your portfolio, I think factors can be incredibly powerful tools that might be overlooked. And we've seen a little bit of that in this recent environment where we saw very strong flows into sector funds and the broad cap-weighted sector category like technology and healthcare. And in a lot of cases, investors are expressing a view. They are taking a tactical tilt, and they're doing so with an instrument that may at times be too blunt. Think, you know, technology, which in addition to including cloud computing, also includes, you know, mainline computers, healthcare, you know, alongside drug manufacturers and those working on an inoculation for the virus are also, you know, pairing HMOs in that kind of broad cap weighted sector. So they're fairly broad. And what we find is that factor funds like Momentum could be perhaps expressing the views of winners in this pandemic environment across sectors more precisely than that broad market cap weighted sector is. So I think recognizing the factors can be perhaps a useful tool for those who already have decided to express a view. Then the next thing I would look at is certainly where we're at in the economy is important. So, you know, late stage contractionary environment favors the more defensive factors like quality and minimum volatility. Accelerations out of a trough tend to favor more offensive factors like value and size. And then momentum tends to work best when markets are very consensus driven. So we're actually least positive on momentum at this moment because we feel like we're in a sort of a shifting environment, at least in part because we feel we're in a shifting environment, and we're most constructive on quality because of where we're at in the cycle and relative valuations. But then, you know, alongside economic cycle, I would consider valuations and I would consider the trends that we're seeing in the market. So the momentum on momentum or the momentum on value. But all that to say, like, I think it's incredibly difficult to do. I think it's important for investors who are being tactical to recognize the power of factor investments as an additional tool in that toolkit. But for most, I think the most important thing is just to make sure you have balanced exposure to a wide variety of factors that can perform across the economic cycle as a part of your strategic asset allocation.
Well, and to your last point, when you talk about a balanced approach, where does a multi-factor strategy fit in here? If my memory serves me correctly, I believe iShares recently launched a trio of multi-factor ETFs. I know you have a U.S. equity factor rotation ETF, ticker DYNF. Where does a multi-factor approach fit?
Yeah, multi-factor investments are really great for investors who are looking to buy balanced factor exposure. So I think of single factors as awesome tools for those who kind of want to tinker with that allocation, get your balance in building block pieces that you can move around to express a view. Multi-factor investments at their core are the kind of buy it solution. So it's an all-in-one ticker, an all-in-one investment. And you're right, they come in a variety of flavors. So I would say most of kind of the earliest multi-factor investments that were launched were really core allocation exposures. They were that blend category of the style box, and they're giving you exposure to things like quality and momentum and value and smaller cap investing together in one portfolio. What we then started to see is really that next generation or that evolution of multi-factor investing where you are incorporating dynamic factor tilts. So DYNF, you're right, is a ticker that we launched a year ago, a little over a year ago, that incorporates our own factor timing views. So think of it as your active manager within factor space packaged in an ETF. And then most recently this year, what we have been hearing from clients is that they take a style box framework of investing. So they want to replace an underperforming large cap growth manager, and they want a large cap growth factor fund to replace that manager with because they can get many of the same tilts and the same types of screens embedded at potentially a far lower price point. And so what we have come out with are style box category invest multi-factor investments. So STLG is our large cap growth multi-factor fund specifically designed to sit in that style box and give you exposure to multiple factors at once. STLV is the large cap value version of that. So we're starting to see this evolution of kind of all-in-one packaged solutions, particularly for the majority of investors who don't feel like they really have the tools in their toolkit to be expressing a view themselves, and therefore they're seeking balance.
Okay, Holly, just a few minutes left here. As we look to the back half of the year, give us a broad outlook in terms of what you'll be watching for from a factor perspective. What are some key drivers to watch? Because obviously there are a ton of variables out there right now, right, in terms of the coronavirus and getting the economy back up and running. We have an upcoming election. There's been civil unrest. What are you watching for?
All of the above. So I think there are a few bits of history that we can draw on to play through some scenarios of how factors will work. So when we think about the shape of the recovery, that's hugely impactful. When we look back at the 2001 recovery, what we really saw was more of a classic V-shaped recovery. We saw a very fast and swift bubble burst on account of high overvaluation from a specific sector in the market. And as a result, when the market rebounded, we saw a swift rebound in value investing, in particular value and small cap paired together, certainly. And so if we were to see an environment where we had a vaccine, where everybody, you know, most jobs came back and people were back to work and spending money and we could move on with our lives, then you could see a potential V-shaped recovery here. I don't think this has gone on long enough yet for us to believe that we have real permanent impairment, but certainly the longer it stretches, that becomes possible. The second scenario would be, call it a Nike swoosh or a U-shaped recovery. It would look far more similar to the 2008-2009 crash and recovery. And in that case, when the recovery is prolonged, when it is choppy and it comes in fits and starts, you tend to see factors like minimum volatility and quality really persist through that prolonged uncertainty. And so, you know, in the opposite world of a V-shape, if we don't have a vaccine this fall, if kids don't go back to school and parents are still working from home or not working at all, then potentially we move closer to a scenario that looks a bit more like 2008 from a factor performance standpoint than a 2001. So those are kind of some of the things that we're paying attention to here. At this stage, I would say cautiously optimistic that there's not permanent impairment to the economy, but the longer this drags on, we're building more caution into that view and I think getting far more constructive on quality.
Well, Holly, excellent overview on factor investing this week. Really enjoyed the conversation. Certainly appreciate you taking the time, and hopefully we can do this again soon. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much.
That was Holly Framstead, head of U.S. ETFs product segment at iShares.